DW.
I recently got the chance to speak with Dr. Goodall over the phone from her home in the UK. As she travels the globe upwards of 300 days a year speaking about hope, I started out by asking what gives her hope for our planet.
Well, the hope is dependent on our taking action now. I mean, I don't think we've got forever. Just think things are going to come right unless we do something about it, because they're not. But my hope is the energy and commitment of young people now that they're beginning to understand the problems, and we're empowering them to take action and listening to them. So that's probably my greatest reason for hope. But also, we have this incredible intellect, and we're beginning to use that to find ways that we can live in greater harmony with the planet, you know, to extract carbon dioxide from the air and find ways of living our lives so that we each leave a lighter ecological footprint. And then the next reason is the resilience of nature, so that we can completely destroy an environment and then give it time and perhaps some help. And once again, nature can return, maybe not quite the same. And animals on the very brink of extinction can be and have been given another chance. And then finally, there's the indomitable human spirit, the people who tackle what seems to be impossible and won't give up and inspire everybody around them. So those are my main reasons for hope. Now, that's the only reason I keep going. I meet amazing people and I see incredible projects.
Do you ever feel like giving up? Have you ever...
I don't feel like giving up. I sometimes feel I don't know how much longer I can go on, but not giving up while I can do something about it.
What would you say some of your biggest takeaways have been from working on conservation efforts over the years?
Well, I think some of the stories about the resilience of nature. I've just been in New Zealand, and some time ago I wrote a book called Hope for Animals and Their World. And in it was the story of the little black robin, about the size of our robin, but it's completely black, and it's not related, of course. And the hero of the story is Don Merton, who's sadly since died of cancer, but he studied them, and he noticed their numbers were dwindling. There were only, I think it was 12 birds left, so they caught them all, took them to an offshore island, went back in the spring, because it couldn't get there in the winter, it's too rough and rugged, and there were only 7 birds left. Mm. And of those 7, only one female, and she was mated, and they mate for life normally. She was mated to a male who turned out to be infertile. So she dumped her husband, picked one of the younger males, and they bonded, and they made a nest. And Don risked something which he wasn't sure would work, and so took a lot of courage, I think. He destroyed the nest and took out the 2 eggs, and gave the 2 eggs to hatch to a bird of similar size, quite common, a tomtit. And as he had prayed and hoped, they were called blue and yellow. Blue had a blue leg band, and yellow had a yellow one. So blue and yellow made another nest, and Blue laid 2 more eggs, and he took those away and gave them to another pair of tomtits, and then he left them with their 3rd nest and their last 2 eggs. And then he realized, well, if I leave the babies who've just hatched with the tomtits, they won't know how to be black robins. So he took the 2 babies, little tiny babies, to Blue on her nest, and she accepted them, and she went on, you know, incubating her last 2 eggs. And then the next 2 were the tomtits hatched, so he took them back as well. And he said, Blue looked up at me as if to say, what next? And he said, it's all right, darling, we're going to help you. So he and the other biologists ran around helping Yellow to catch food to feed Blue and the growing family. And now there's over 500.
Wow, amazing.
So, I mean, that's a beautiful story.
Yeah, definitely. What do you wish people knew more about animals?
That animals like us have feelings, that they have personalities, that they can feel happy or sad, that they can feel pain and fear and despair. and that they're so much more intelligent than we used to think. The way we treat them in the factory farms, the puppy mills, horrible training for circuses, keeping whales and dolphins in aquariums. All of these things we do are so, so appalling once you realize it's not just humans who have personalities, minds, and emotions.
With all of your work in conservation and studying chimps, what have animals taught you about humans?
That we've been so wretchedly arrogant, that we're part of the animal kingdom and not separated from it. That we have inherited a lot of aggressive tendencies, for example, but also altruistic ones, both of which we find in the chimp, but that with our intellect, we actually are capable of controlling our instincts, and we don't do a very good job of it.
You've inspired a lot of people around the world, especially women, female primatologists, scientists, women in all walks of life who have seen the risks you've taken in your work and the way you speak about your work as revolutionary. I was just wondering what women in your life have inspired you.
Well, my mother, my grandmother. I mean, when I began, you know, there weren't women doing anything like what I wanted to do. Not at all. There just weren't any.
What inspired you to get into the work that you did? What made you believe that you could do that work?
Well, I was 10 years old when I decided I would go to Africa, live with animals and write books about them. That was after reading Dr. Doolittle and Tarzan. And everybody laughed at me and said it would be impossible, except my mother, who said, if you really want this, you're going to have to work really hard, take advantage of every opportunity, but don't give up. That's what I've told young people, especially girls in disadvantaged communities. And I just wish Mom was alive to know how many people have said to me, thank you, Jane, you've taught me, because you did it, I can do it too.
Well, I have just one last question. If reincarnation is real, what creature would you like to come back as in the next life?
Well, I actually think if there is reincarnation, it will be giving us a second chance to do better. And I think I would come back as another human being. But if I had to be an animal, in the world today, it's hard to know, because animals are having such a tough time everywhere. I'd like to be a dog in a really good family that understands and loves dogs, because I think the dog-human relationship is wonderful. And it was my dog, Rusty, who taught me about animals when I was growing up.
Thank you so much, Dr. Goodall, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. DW.